Why Indiana cattle producers need to be on the lookout for avian influenza. That's coming up in the news here on the Hoosier Ag Today podcast, made possible by First Farmers Bank and Trust. Experience banking built on heart, grit, and agriculture. You can learn more at ffbt.com, or you can just simply stop by your local branch today and talk about your ag operation. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. I've got the latest Indiana farm news, weather, and markets coming up. Also in the news today, we've been talking a lot about foreign ownership of Indiana farmland. Well, what about domestic ownership and large corporations? Sabrina Halverson has that story. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana farm forecast. When are we going to really start to warm up around here? And we talk markets with Arlen Suderman, StoneX. We saw losses across the grain complex on Tuesday. All that's on the way. The news is next here on HAT.
At First Farmers Bank and Trust, agriculture has been a cornerstone of our business for more than 135 years. Our personal relationships within the ag community run deep for multiple generations. If you're looking for a financial partner that knows, understands, and supports agriculture, we want to hear from you. Let's grow success together. Visit us online at ffbt.com or visit any of our branches to meet an ag expert in your area. First Farmers Bank and Trust. Member FDIC. Equal opportunity lender.
Indiana cattle producers need to be on the lookout for the bird flu and more on farmland ownership, but this time from domestic owners. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. This is Hoosier Ag Today. On Monday, USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, confirmed that clinical samples of milk from sick cattle from two dairy farms in Kansas and one in Texas tested positive for highly pathogenic avian influenza. Dr. Brett Marsh, Indiana's state veterinarian, told Hoosier Ag Today that he spoke with his counterpart in Texas to get a clearer understanding of the symptoms exhibited by these cattle.
They've seen a decrease in feed consumption. Then they get a drop in milk production, and particularly the cows that are affected, which seem to be mid and late lactation cattle, were producing milk that was more colostrum-like. Producers in Indiana, if they're seeing clinical signs that are consistent with what I just described, we would certainly encourage them to reach out to their veterinarians to have an evaluation done of the herd.
Marsh reiterated that avian flu in cattle has not been detected in Indiana, but it's important to know that these detections in Texas appear to have been introduced by wild birds.
If our dairy producers in the state have retention ponds, et cetera, where these birds may be accumulating, I would encourage them to take a look at ways to haze the birds away. Also to take a look at their biosecurity practices around the operations and making sure that traffic on and off the site is being monitored and appropriate biosecurity steps are taken so that we're not moving this virus around.
Initial testing by the National Veterinary Services Laboratories has not found changes to the virus that would make it more transmissible to humans, meaning the current risk to the public remains low. Additionally,
so the milk that's in the commercial milk supply is safe to consume with the pasteurization that's routinely used in milk products. There's no concern on the part of the public from a public health or food safety standpoint.
And Marsh says the same can be said for beef consumption. Read more and hear the full HAT interview with Dr. Marsh at HoosierAgToday.com. Some lawmakers in D.C. are considering a bill that would restrict farmland from being owned by large American corporations. Sabrina Halverson has the story.
Foreign ownership of American land has gained a lot of buzz as of late, but Fran Miller with the Vermont Law and Graduate School Center of Agriculture and Food Studies says more attention should be given to domestic corporate ownership.
Congress, I think in probably a nonpartisan or bipartisan way, actually, have been focusing on some of the foreign investors in farmland. But in my opinion, that really ignores the bigger issue in America, which is corporate consolidation, domestic corporations, and ways that land is being treated as a commodity, as an investment vehicle.
She says it not only takes viable ag land off the market, but also drives up the cost of land that is available for smaller farmers.
And it's decimating to rural communities. It's not a good thing. And it prevents younger farmers and farmers with less capital to purchase land. It takes people out of rural communities, sends them off in other places.
The Center for Agriculture and Food Systems partners with the National Family Farm Coalition on policy work, including the Farmland for Farmers Act, The bill would restrict corporations and multi-layered subsidiaries, pension funds, and investment funds from purchasing and leasing land and then getting USDA subsidies. Miller said there are exemptions for people who are farming the land themselves. It would also strengthen state authority to regulate corporations, both domestic and foreign, involved in farmland ownership. Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Find more on the free HAT mobile app. This is Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
The High Ground Podcast. Everything from energy and fuel.
It's Memorial Day weekend, going to be 87 to 89, maybe low 90s all weekend. So we thought we'd bring Scott Heine in. So we'll talk about home heat.
To agriculture.
Anytime we can help a farmer grow their business and meet their goals, that's a proud moment for me.
And, well, other things.
For some reason, like and subscribe. We don't know why, but that's important.
We want you to do it on your own, but we're going to tell you.
Listen now on all platforms.
I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast. As we take a look at the update here today, we are behind our frontal complex from yesterday. That means we should see clouds give way to sunshine today. Yay! But it also means we have some cold air coming in today. Boo! Temperatures are going to be not below normal, but we're definitely chilly. And let's put it this way, not as cold as the last round of cold air that came in last week. But this up and down stuff, I'll tell you what, it gets tiring here in the spring. What I can tell you is we are dry for the next couple of days. Today and tomorrow, while it's cool, we are dry. Getting into Friday, we're mostly dry. I guess I won't want to rule out a few hit-and-miss scattered showers over northern parts of the Hoosier State Friday morning. Minor disturbance once the seam to set up there. I think it's mostly due to warm air surging back north over the state. And then we go into the weekend, the Easter holiday weekend, and you know what? You're going to want to keep that umbrella by your side. You may not need it all the time, but there are some pop-up showers that can be in here on Saturday and then again on Sunday. You go into late Sunday, and there's the threat of some stronger thunderstorms trying to fire off overnight into early Monday. So this is kind of a long, drawn-out event. It almost is acting like a warm front that's kind of stalled here, and we get some activation along it from time to time. I'm not sure that this is the exact spot that it is going to set up. Yesterday, we had this moisture farther south on our data runs. Today, it's up into central and northern parts of the Hoosier State, so it could set up anywhere at this point, but I just want to say be prepared for a little bit of moisture over the Easter holiday weekend. I think we continue with some showers and thunderstorms in parts of the state into Monday of next week, and then from Tuesday forward, we are drier. We're slightly cooler for Tuesday, but then temperatures moderate Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I think we have good evaporation in that time frame, and we should have a nice setup overall. But this Easter holiday weekend, little touch and go. I don't want to say March is going out like a lion, but there could be some stronger weather trying to develop. We'll keep an eye on that. That's the way your forecast is stacking up. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
Farm Credit Mid-America is a lender that has farmers' backs. With its patronage program, they give patronage-eligible customer owners a portion of their profits as cash. This year, Indiana patronage-eligible customer owners have gotten back more than $66 million. It's one more way Farm Credit Mid-America is showing up for farmers and strengthening rural communities. Patronage is an annual decision made by the Board of Directors to return earnings to eligible customers. For more on patronage eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Grain markets finish lower ahead of Thursday's USDA Prospective Plantings Report. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. This is Hoosier Ag Today's Tuesday Farm Market Review. Tuesday market numbers are on the way in just moments. First, let's get market analysis with Arlen Suderman at StoneX, StoneX.com. Arlen, we're seeing losses across the grain markets here on Tuesday. I want to focus in here on the soybean market first. It seems like we're kind of treading around this $12 mark, maybe this psychological level of support, but seems like maybe come Thursday when we get this big USDA report, it's probably pretty well going to decide, are we going higher or lower than that $12 mark, right?
Yeah, I think a little bit of background information. We basically built massive short or sold positions by managed money across the grain and oilseed complex this winter, And then we had a short covering rally as the funds reduced the size of their short positions as geopolitical risks were increasing. And as we were entering a period of time with increased elevated weather risks in major producing areas of the world, and we're approaching these USDA reports on Thursday that are known for their surprises. But in the process, we saw an increase in farmer selling. Both sides of the equator, but especially in Brazil, kind of capped those gains. And we also got to levels where the fundamentals simply couldn't support going higher. We still have ample supplies, and that's certainly true of soybeans with a big Argentine crop following a bigger than anticipated Brazilian crop. U.S. exports falling off pretty fast now as Brazil and Argentina taking the market share, the bulk of the global business here in the months ahead, and just lacking a story to support higher prices at this point around that $12 psychological level you mentioned.
And Arlen, you talked about this big report coming from USDA on Thursday, prospective plantings. What are your expectations for the report?
Well, we are looking for a shift from corn to soybeans. Part of that is because we were heavy on the corn in the rotation. So normally we would have been lighter on it this year anyway, lighter on the corn than soybeans simply because of that. But market economics are also leading to a shift. Not in the core of the Midwest. That stays fairly constant. Most of the shift tends to come in the peripheral areas, in the South and in the plains. So we're looking for a 2.5 million acre decline in corn acreage and a 2 million acre increase in soybeans, along with an increase in rice and in cotton acreage. In the South, depending on where you're at, where those acres will be as you go into the plains, we've got some new crush facilities helping basis opportunities encourage soybean production there.
Arlen, we did see losses for corn on Tuesday as well. Sounds like we're getting some good rains across Brazil. But that may not be the full story. That's pretty near term right now, right?
It really is. And if you look at that area, if you look at the winter corn belt as a whole, the weighted average rainfall for the past 30 days is about 8 inches of rain. Keep in mind, that's a tropical area. So the soils, therefore, are fairly porous. They require a lot of water going through. They've been above normal in temperatures, especially nighttime temperatures. So it does require a little bit more. But the crop's been holding on decently. Enough. They've had timely enough rains. And in the last 5 days, they've had some good rains. Overall, the last 30 days have totaled around 5 inches on a weighted basis. But as we go forward, the rains normally drop off dramatically, especially in Mato Grosso further to the north, which is the core production area, to about 3 inches for the entire month of April with their poor soils is not much. And we're looking for below normal rainfall, so even less than that if the weather models are correct. Now, that's still the big key. Confidence beyond 10 days tends to be below 50%. But if indeed we do get that drier forecast, we could see those production totals drop off.
With Arlen Suderman, StoneX, StoneX.com. Arlen, if folks are, I mean, by now they've had to have seen this, whether it be on social media or through traditional media outlets, what happened with the Port of Baltimore last night, the bridge collapsing. It's been a big news story. It's been something talked about on those traditional news outlets. Is it impacting agriculture in any way? And more specifically, is it impacting these grain markets?
Probably not impacting the grain markets a whole lot. If it is, it's mistaken understanding of it. It's really not a factor for the grain picture overall. Now, for inputs, we do see a significant amount of fertilizer come through the Port of Baltimore, mostly urea, ammonium nitrate to help service the eastern part of the belt, and most of that coming from Russia. If we look at last year's imports, is around 351,000 tons. That ranks at sixth nationally as far as import port for fertilizers. That's a little under half of what we bring through the number one port for fertilizer imports, which would be New Orleans. So we do get a little bit of potash through there and regular urea as well.
So you're saying that those could go back up even just a little bit?
Make it a little bit tighter means we have to reroute those supplies, find different ways to get them to where they need to be. That delays the fertilizer deliveries at a time when we need to get it moving. It's planting season here soon.
Arlen, let's shift over to the livestock markets here. We were discussing this before. It seems like a pretty steep decline in the live cattle market. What's happening there?
Well, there's a couple of factors there. First of all, the funds had built some significant long positions, some ownership in that market, and there was some discussion about when are we going to hit the seasonal top in that market, and so there were some nerves there about that possibility. But then we had news hit this morning that a mysterious disease in the dairy herds in the southwestern plains stretching down from Kansas down into the Texas Panhandle had been identified as a version of bird flu. And so that immediately created some panic among managed money that perhaps that could hurt our beef exports. There's probably not a scientific reason for that, but you never know when it comes to exports when a customer might get spooked. And so on that chance, they started to sell. That then took the lead April contract below the 200-day moving average, tripping more sell stops. So this is mostly reactionary based on emotions of that story.
That's Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX and StoneX.com. Numbers now from Tuesday. May corn down over a nickel, 432.5. July down 6.25, 445. Dease corn to 468, losing 6.75. We were above that $12 psychological mark for much of the day in front month beans, but May beans finally fall down below to $11.99, losing over a dime. July down 9.25, 12.12.5. Novi beans down 7.75 to $11.91. Chicago May wheat was the downside leader, losing 11.5, 5.43.5. Same on the July, down to 5.59.25. In livestock, we mentioned that sharp decline in live cattle futures. June down over $3, 178.37. June lean hogs down 32 cents to 101.35. That does it for the Tuesday Farm Market Review and the Wednesday Morning Podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.